Good evening. This is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by KB8ZGL, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they check in. Information regarding our operation may be found at SCARS, SCARSDOIP.com. I'm your net control for this session. My call is KE5AOF. My name is Greg. I am located in Grand Blanc, Michigan, with a temperature of 66 degrees, and it's very cloudy right now. We were supposed to get a storm, but it looks like it's passed. Prior to starting, I would like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. Okay, seeing no one check in, I'd like to just make a little comment real short here if I could. Bob Grieve, a longtime member of my home radio club, Great Lakes. I'm a little choked up. I'm sorry. Genesee County Radio Club, W8ACW, passed away. He was 95 years old, just a few days shorter than 96. I would personally like to send my condolences and prayers to his family. So that being said, let me go on and. Do we have anyone celebrating their birthday this week? Okay, seeing none. Now, this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Now let me advise all stations connected that this net might be recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. All stations participating will be part of that recording. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to our main captain, KY6B. Gordon, are you there, sir?
Well, so far so good. Thanks, Greg. Good evening, everybody. Gordon here, KY6B. And the program tonight will be comparing human sight to that of radio technology. And it's somewhat interesting how this subject came to light. It came to pass when I was sitting out on the back porch. I was watching the fish jump and the birds fly and daydreaming. And all of a sudden, my mind asked me, how does the human sight decode the visual information, and further, mix the frequencies involved? Well, I didn't know the answer to that, so I went, when I came back inside, started to do a little research, and the deeper I got into the research, and the deeper I pursued this, the more interesting it became. So that's how things got started for this evening. Let's get the program started with our first narrator. That's Dave over in Wales, GW8SZL. Dave, are you ready to fly, sir? KY6V.
KY6V from GW8SZL. Yeah, I'm 42,000 feet and just about to descend into Miami Airport. First of all, I'd like to give my condolences to Greg's mentor. I missed the call sign and his family there. But yep, I'm ready to fly there, Gordon. Anyway, let's continue on. Good evening. Dave here, Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima, and I hope you enjoy the program tonight as much as we did during the preparation stage. Now, our eyes are very sensitive to a very narrow band of frequencies within the enormous range of frequencies of the electromagnetic spectrum. Now, this narrow band of frequencies are referred to as the visible light spectrum. Visible light, that which is detectable by the human eye, basically consists of wavelengths ranging from approximately 780 nanometers, that's 7.80 times 10 to the minus 7 meters, all the way down to 390 nanometers, at 3.90 times 10 to the minus 7 meters. Now, specific wavelengths within the spectrum correspond to a specific color, based upon how humans typically perceive light of that wavelength. The long wavelength end of the spectrum corresponds to light that is perceived by humans to be red, and the short wavelength end of the spectrum corresponds to light that is perceived to be violet. Other colors within the spectrum include orange, yellow, green, and blue. Reset. Now, color can be thought of as a psychological and physiological response to light waves of a specific frequency or set of frequencies impinging upon the human eye. An understanding of the human response to color demands that one understands the biology of the eye. Light that enters the eye through the pupil ultimately strikes the inside surface of the eye, known as the retina. The retina is lined with a variety of light-sensing cells, known as rods and cones. Now, while the rods on the retina are sensitive to the intensity of light, they cannot distinguish between lights of different wavelengths. On the other hand, the cones are the color-sensing cells of the retina. When light of a given wavelength enters the eye and strikes the cones of the retina, a chemical reaction is activated that results in an electrical impulse being sent along nerves to the brain. It is believed that there are three kinds of cones, each sensitive to its own range of wavelengths within the visible light spectrum. These three kinds of cones are referred to as red cones, green cones, and blue cones because of their respective sensitivity to the wavelengths of light that are associated with red, green, and blue. Since the red cone is sensitive to a range of wavelengths, it is not only activated by wavelengths of red light, but also, and to a lesser extent that is, by wavelengths of orange light, yellow light, and even green light. In the same manner, the green cone is most sensitive to wavelengths of light associated with the color green. Yet the green cone can also be activated by wavelengths of light associated with the colors yellow and blue. Now, the cone sensitivity curve helps us to better understand our response to the light that is incident upon the retina. While the response is activated by the physics of light waves, the response itself is both physiological and psychological. Suppose that white light, i.e. light consisting of the full range of wavelengths within the visible spectrum of light, is an incident upon the retina. Upon striking the retina, the physiological occurs. Photochemical reactions occur within the cones to produce electrical impulses that are sent to along the nerves of the brain. The cones respond to the incident light by sending a message to the brain saying, light is hitting me. Now, upon reaching the brain, the physiological occurs. The brain detects the electrical messages being sent by the cones and interprets the meaning of the messages. The brain responds by saying, it is white. For the case of white light entering the eye and striking the retina, each of the three kinds of cones will be activated into sending the electrical messages along to the brain. And the brain recognizes that the messages are being sent by all three cones and somehow interprets this to mean that white light has entered the eye. Now, suppose that light in the yellow range of wavelengths, that's approximately 577 nanometers to 597 nanometers, enters the eye and strikes the retina. Light with these wavelengths would activate both the green and the red cones of the retina. Upon striking the retina, the physiological occurs. Electrical messages are sent by both the red and the green cones to the brain. Now, once received by the brain, the physiological occurs. The brain recognizes that the light has activated both the red and green cones and somehow interprets this to mean that the object is yellow. Now, in this sense, the yellow appearance of objects is simply the result of yellow light from the object entering our eye and stimulating the red and the green cones simultaneously. If the appearance of yellow is perceived of an object when it activates the red and green cones simultaneously, then what appearance would result if two overlapping red and green spotlights entered the eye? Using the same free cone theory, we could make some predictions of the result. Red light entering our eye would mostly activate the red cone, and green light entering our eye would mostly activate the green color cone. Each cone would send a usual electrical message to the brain. And if the brain has been physiologically trained to interpret these two signals to mean yellow, then the brain would perceive the overlapping red and green spotlights to appear as yellow. Now, to the eye-brain system, there is no difference in the physiological and the psychological response to yellow light, and the mixture of red and green light. The brain has no means of distinguishing between the two physical situations. In a technical sense, it is really not appropriate to refer to light as being coloured. Light is simply a wave with a specific waveform or a mixture of waveforms. It has no colour in and by itself. An object that's emitting or reflecting light to our eye appears to have a specific colour as a result of the eye-brain response to the wavelength. So, technically, there is really no such thing as yellow light. Rather, there is light with a wavelength of about 590 nanometers that appears yellow. And there is also light with a mixture of wavelengths of about 700 nanometers and 530 nanometers that together appears as yellow. The yellow appearance of these two clearly different light sources can be traced to the physiological and the psychological effect of the eye-brain system, and not to the actual light itself. So to be technically appropriate, a person would refer to yellow light as light that creates a yellow appearance. Yet, to maintain a larger collection of friendships, a person would refer to yellow light as yellow light. Okay, I hope you all enjoy that, the cones and the physiological and the psychological effect. So at this point, before I pass it on to the next narrator, I'm going to ask for any check-ins or any comments. So if you'd like to comment or just check in and say hi, please call now. This is Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Okay, any check-ins or comments at this point of the net? GW8SNL. If so, please call now. Okay, hearing none, I'm going to pass it over to Ben, and that's Kilo Delta 8 Juliet Bravo Sierra. Are you there, Ben? From Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima.
Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Go ahead.
Okay, Kilo Delta 8, Juliet Bravo Sierra, are you ready for your part of the net there, Ben? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Let me know when you're ready for me to go ahead. I have a brief presentation. Go ahead.
Yes, it's all yours, Ben, all yours. Go right ahead. From Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima.
Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Thank you, Dave, in South Wales. Good evening, everyone. My name is Ben Murray, call sign Kilo Delta 8 Juliet Bravo Sierra. QTH is Bryan, Ohio, in Northwest Ohio, in the northwest corner of Ohio. Thank you one and all for having me. I want to thank Gordon, KY6V, for the invitation for having me. Also to my good friend David, KB9EWG, for bringing this topic to my attention and encouraging me to come on board to check in. So, in a nutshell, I am visually impaired and have been since birth. I have a condition called optic nerve atrophy. I have used multiple magnifiers over the years and things like that, and have done very well over the years, and was homeschooled, did not go to public school or anything like that. And in 2015, I discovered online while searching one day, a technology called eSight eyewear. Let me do a reset. This technology claimed to give its users 20/20 vision. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a shot and make an appointment and go, you know, try it out. I had to take a day off work to go travel to Dayton, Ohio, which is about 2 hours south. The company is based in Canada, of course, and they were traveling at the time to make, you know, consultation calls to different office buildings and such and hotels. So I got to the appointment and tried them on and was able to start reading again clearly, something I could never do before. And that was amazing. But what really shocked me was seeing my father clearly for the first time and looking out over the city of Dayton and seeing an actual radio station tower. I'm not sure whether it was for an FM station or a ham repeater. I think it was for a amateur radio repeater, honestly. I was just in tears. And the way this technology works is it takes a you point your nose at what you're looking at. The image is picked up from a standard camera on the front of the glasses, and it processes that image back to you on two OLED screens in front of your eyes. Break. And KD8JBS continuing. The user can then manipulate that image, zoom in and zoom out up to 24 times, increase contrast, pitch, freeze the image, record video, all kinds of neat things. Currently, the eSight device is on its fourth generation. In development right now is a device called eSight Go, of which I am fundraising for. I will talk more about that here in just a moment. This technology is truly amazing, and I am blessed to have come across it. It certainly has given me a game changer in amateur radio. I can see all my radio displays, my computer screens, people's faces in the community. I can go to a restaurant and order things and, you know, not worry about, oh, what does this say or what does that say? It's truly an amazing tool. And I want to try to bring it into amateur radio for folks who could possibly benefit from it. Break. This is KD8JBS continuing, and I'm just grateful to have been here tonight. And like I said, the technology is great, and I am blessed to have been honored to speak about it. It comes with two batteries, and the cost is about $7,000. The cost of this new one is going to be somewhere around $8,000, they think. Like I said, I'm currently fundraising for that. If folks have any questions or anything, I will pause. It says here to ask any questions now. So I'll open the floor up for any questions about the technology. This is Kilo Delta 8, Juliet Bravo Sierra, standing by.
KY6V, Ben.
Go ahead, Gordon. KY6V and KD8JBS. Go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for joining us tonight. It's a pleasure to have you aboard, sir. I just have a quick question. I haven't been able to find it in my e-search or e-site reference material, but do you see color when you have these glasses on? Over.
Yes, sir. 100% better with them on than with them off. Without them, colors are very pale. Very dark. I mean, not dark. I have a lot. I mean, it just, my biggest issue is detail. Colors are very pale, though, without them. Go ahead.
Very interesting. Well, thank you for that, sir. Continue on, and again, thank you. KY6V.
You are welcome. And for folks interested in helping, I know that you cannot solicit things on amateur radio or ask for money, but I feel like the ham community is a great place to, you know, ask for support in something like this. Is there an email, Gordon, where I can send out my donation link, where you could send it out to everyone to spread the word for this new pair that I'm fundraising for, KY6V from JBS?
Yeah, sure. You put the information together and send it to me, either my private account, or you can send it to VOIP at scarsvoip.com, and I'll get it that way also. And I will I'll see that it gets involved in one of our weekly mailing episodes. Over.
Thank you. Yes. Currently, for the new unit, I'm over $2,000 in funds raised for the $8,000 that I need. So we're making good progress. And I get to test this new unit next month here. So making great progress. I look forward to sharing again in a future net my progress when you take general check-ins, you know, for nets again. But I'm beyond blessed and grateful. I'm currently the president of my amateur radio club, ARRLVE liaison for my local club, for my club for in-person sessions, as well as online, and as well as a GLARG VE for KB9EWG and Terry W5TMP for GLARG as well. So that's all I have, and I'm not sure who the next narrator is because I'm having difficulty reading the font here on the paper. So, Gordon, I don't know who to turn it back to, so I'll give it to you, Captain. Thanks again for having me on board. Thanks again, everyone, for your time. And, Gordon, I'll get this information over to you right away. 73 is all. Thank you for your time. Kilo Delta 8, Juliet Bravo Sierra, back to net control.
Okay, well, we just had a mailing go out today. So it will be this time or Friday of next week before the next mailing goes out. But so you can take your time in getting it to me, but as long as I get it before I'm ready to publish, we're all set. It's going to be turned over to Roger, W4RFJ, in Rainbow Springs, Florida. He doesn't want to admit that he's closer to Dillion Springs, or Dillion Springs, Dunellen. But I won't argue with that, Chief. KY6V, go ahead, sir.
Okay. Captain, thank you, sir. And thank you, Ben. Nice of you to join us here this evening. Kilo Delta 8, Juliet Bravo Sierra. And anybody that hangs out with EWG is a good friend of mine. All right, let's see. My turn to narrate. Good evening, one all. Chief here, W4RJ, my section. First covering the mixing process in rail circuit system, both the human eye and with radio technology. In electronics, a mixer or frequency mixer is an electrical circuit that creates new frequencies from two signals applied to it. In its most common application, two signals are applied to a mixer and it produces new signals at the sum and difference of the original frequencies. Other frequency components may also be produced in a practical frequency mixer. Mixers are widely used from one frequency range to another, a process known as heterodyning for convenience in transmission or further signal processing. For example, a key component of a superheterodyne receiver is a mixer used to move receive signals to a common intermediate frequency. Frequency mixers are also used to modulate a carrier signal in radio transmitters. Let me grab a nickel real quick. The essential characteristics of a mixer is that it produces a component in its output, which is the product of two input signals. Both active and passive circuits can realize mixers. Passive mixers use one or more diodes and rely on their nonlinear relation between voltage and current to provide the multiplying element. In a passive mixer, the desired output signal is always of lower power than the input signals. Active mixers use an amplifying device, such as a transistor or vacuum tube. What is that? Oh, I know what a vacuum tube is. That may increase the strength of the product signal. Active mixers improve isolation between the ports, but may have higher noise and more power consumption. An active mixer can be less tolerant of an overload. Mixers may be built of discrete components may be part of integrated circuits or building blocks, or can be delivered as hybrid modules, which is a mixture of both. Now, as mentioned before, electricity is also needed to make each of these items we are comparing to work. In the case of radio side, the electricity is created by power supplies or batteries producing AC or DC. On the human body side, things are slightly different. Let me grab a nickel. The elements in our bodies, like sodium, potassium, calcium, and magnesium, have a specific electrical charge. Almost all of our cells can use these charged elements called ions to generate electricity. The contents of the cell are protected from the outside environment by a cell membrane. This cell membrane is made up of lipids that create a barrier that only certain substances can cross to reach the cell interior. Not only does the cell membrane function as a barrier to molecules, but it also acts as a way for the cell to generate electrical currents. Resting cells are negatively charged on the inside, while the outside environment is more positively charged. This is due to a slight imbalance between the positive and negative ions inside the and outside the cell. Cells can achieve this charge separation by allowing charged ions to flow in and out through the membrane. The flow of charges across the cell membrane is what generates the electrical current. Let me grab another nickel. Cells control the flow of specific charged elements across the membrane with proteins that sit on the cell surface and create an opening for certain ions to pass through. These proteins are called ion channels. When a cell is stimulated, it allows positive charges to enter the cell through open ion channels. The inside of the cell then becomes more positively charged, which triggers further electrical currents that can turn into electrical pulses called action potentials. Give me a second here. Did somebody key up there? Okay. Now I lost where I was. My throat was getting dry. I had to take a swig. All right, let me see. Okay. Our bodies use certain patterns of action potentials to initiate the correct movements, thoughts, and behaviors. A disruption in electrical currents can lead to illness. For example, in order for the heart to pump, cells must generate electrical currents that allow the heart muscle to contract at the right time. Doctors can even observe these electrical pulses in the heart using a machine called an electrocardiogram, or ECG. Irregular electrical currents can prevent heart muscles from contracting correctly, leading to a heart attack. This is just one example showing the important role of electricity in health and disease. Resetting timers. Okay, I hope everybody's following along because my throat just went dry. Now bringing the subject back to human sight, we find the following. First, light passes through the cornea, the clear front layer of the eyeball. The cornea is shaped like a dome and bends light to help the eye focus. Some of this light enters the eye through an opening called the pupil. The iris, which is the colored part of the eye, controls how much light the pupil lets in. Next, light passes through the lens, a clear inner part of the eye, and the lens works together with the cornea to focus light correctly on the retina. When light hits the retina, a light-sensitive layer of tissue at the back of the eyeball, special cells called photoreceptors, turn that light into electrical signals. These electrical signals travel from the retina through the optic nerve to the brain. Then the brain turns the signals into the images that we see. All right, well, at this time, I'd like to ask for check-ins or comments, changes and or deletions, and then we'll pass it over to Woody Squared. Is there anybody who'd like to check in at this time? Please call W4RFJ, your third narrator in this series.
Yeah, Chief, VK2DY, just want to check in.
Okay, fine business, Robert. Good to hear your voice in there. How's things going? It's probably about 2 o'clock in the morning for you, isn't it?
Yeah, Chief, VK2DY here. It is 9:33 a.m. On Friday morning here. Cold night. We got down to 3 degrees Celsius, and it's only about 8 degrees Celsius at the moment. So we're in the midst of winter. VK2DY.
Okay, well, as I've told you before, I always enjoy talking into the future, being it's Thursday night here. Well, thanks for joining us there, Robert, and certainly, or should I say, Professor Down Under, and let's see if anybody else would like to check in. This is W4RFJ with the South Cars Thursday Information Net. Come now. I know everybody's fighting to get to that microphone, so I'll just try one more time. Please call W4RFJ for any comments or check-ins. All right, nothing heard. I guess we're going to turn it over to our good friend KO4UMQ, Woody Squared. And Woody, I'd like to chat with you after the net, if you're available. It's over to you, sir. Take her away, W4RFJ.
Well, thank you, Chief. Sure, I can wait till after the net to talk to you, no problem at all. And good evening, everyone. This is Woody Squared, KO4UMQ, and I will be summarizing the main points of tonight's program. First, we found a significant comparison tonight between human sight and radio technology. We have found that when necessary, both systems use the technique of frequency mixing. We found that both systems need electricity to function, and we have most probably found that we are now asking ourselves which came first, the chicken or the egg. Before asking for any last-minute check-ins or questions or comments, allow me to talk a minute about RTIN program. SCARS VOIP has been in operation over 15 years and the TIN program over 14 years. With that said, we have over 250 podcasts posted on our website that are archived and available for viewing. If at any time you have a program that you may think the membership would be interested in, please drop us an email at voip@scarsvoip.com, and we will be happy to discuss the program with you. And at this time, I'm going to ask if there are any further check-ins or any questions or any comments for this evening. If so, please call now. Okay, one last time. Anybody out there would like to check in or have any comments about tonight's program? If so, please call now. All right, with nothing heard, this has been SCARS. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on scarsvoip.com website. This is KO4UMQ saying 7-3 and closing this net session for this evening. I'd like to thank everybody who participated, the narrators, and everyone who checked in. And this net is now closed, and I am now turning the SCARS conference node back to normal amateur use. This is KO4UMQ, and I'm clear. Good night, everyone.